Well, welcome. My name is Matt McKenna. I'm the director of the Great Lakes Washington Program at the Northeast U.S. Institute. Thank you very much for coming today for this morning briefing on Great Lakes Maritime Priorities. We're getting off to a little bit of a late start, so I'm just going to kick it right off to my principal at the Conference of the Great Lakes Governors and Premiers. He will provide us with a brief overview of some of their priorities and some of the big ticket agenda items that the governors and premiers are working on in our region to work on maritime infrastructure. Mike?
Right. Thanks, Matt, and thanks for helping to organize this event in the first place. So again, my name is Mike Pisker. I'm with the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Governors and Premiers, and here to talk about maritime priorities. I'm going to move fairly quickly through this deck so that we can get to our second speaker, Bruce Nierenberg, and then hopefully have some time for questions and discussion. So briefly about our organization, it is a partnership of the governors of the Great Lakes states and the two Canadian premiers from Quebec and Ontario. Building on about 30 years of work of the Council of Great Lakes Governors, this current arrangement recognizes the full partnership of the Quebec and Ontario. So as you can see, the mission is growing the region's $6 trillion economy, protecting the world's greatest freshwater system with the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence River. Representing about 20% of the world's surface freshwater. And Michigan Governor Rick Snyder is our current chairman. So the conference works on a mission of economic development and environmental protection. And a big piece of our work in recent years has been maritime transportation. So this is a nice image showing sort of the network of ports represented by the blue dots. And how, and the smaller gray dots as well, and how they tie into the larger network of rail and road really across the region. And the whole view of this is that maritime is a backbone of the region's $6 trillion economy. So just a few quick stats about the regional maritime system. 100 commercial ports, continuous waterway extending from Duluth, Minnesota in the west all the way to the Gulf of St. Lawrence in the east, and approximately 400 million tons of cargo moving through the region's ports, and traditionally bulk cargoes, things like iron ore, limestone, coal of that nature, and then a growing share of things like project cargo. You can see a picture here in the upper right of some wind turbine components coming in, believed to the port of Burns Harbor in Indiana. So maritime is a big job, a producer and a generator of wages, at least 220,000 jobs across the region, and $30 billion in business revenue. So really a major component of the regional economy. In 2016, the governors and premiers released the first maritime strategy for the Great Lakes St. Lawrence region, with the goals of doubling maritime trade, shrinking the environmental footprint of the region's transportation network, and supporting the region's industrial core. And talk about that last point a little bit more in the context of the Sioux Locks. This strategy was generated over about the course of a year, and this is a collaborative project with the government, the states and provinces, the federal partners, industry, and a lot of other partners really working closely over a year to have a consensus approach to the strategy. And it includes some 36 recommendations, things for the states and provinces to do, things for the federal government, the industry, all working together. So a few ongoing priorities, and these are things I'm not going to talk about in detail now, but just to make sure that it's on everyone's radar, these come from the strategy itself. Looking at system bottlenecks, things slowing down the movement of goods through the system. The Canadian federal government is working on this sort of analysis right now, and for their side of the border. And there was a letter from Senator Peter's office signed by 8 other senators last year encouraging the former Secretary of Transportation to have the DOT do the similar thing for the Great Lakes. Unfortunately, it didn't happen within the past administration, but we do hope that that can happen soon. Pilotage is an ongoing issue, both in terms of cost, availability. While it presents an important safety aspect for the system, it is something that continues to be an issue for system users. Things like dredging and ice breaking require better coordination throughout the system, and always more funding is welcome, specifically to deal with the existing backlog of dredging projects. Better data and metrics to better understand how to manage the system, and looking at the framework for a U.S.-Canada binational treaty dealing with governance for the maritime system. So this is something that, while will be difficult to enact in terms of getting a treaty actually approved. I think this is the best method for bringing some needed system reforms, and that's something we'll be focusing on in the years to come. So the reason I'm here today is to talk about three other issues, all sort of distinct but very important in their own way. First is the SULACs, which for those who can get situated, you can see here this heat map on the top, which comes from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Sort of the white line north of Michigan, that's in the St. Mary's River, that's where the LAC is located. So that represents the amount of ships and cargo moving through that point. So really the critical point of the system, and really kind of the single, what's considered a single point of failure throughout the system if something were to go wrong. So there's a current study pending for building a new lock that would allow the transit of 1,000-foot-long vessels carrying iron ore from the Iron Ranges in the northern part of the maritime system, Minnesota, down to the steel mills in Indiana and Ohio and throughout. So you can see that sort of arc coming from northeast to southwest through the system. So these two photos at the bottom here, on the left, this is the current setup. So I don't have a pointer, but sort of the third lock system there on this photo on the left, that's the current pole lock where the largest ships can move through. On the right, on the left side, there's two locks that are basically too shallow for large ships to move through. So the idea is a conceptual rendering here on the right, those would be replaced by one wider and deeper lock. So just a little bit of background in terms of the process. The original, the two operating locks in terms of large vessels constructed in 1948 and 1968. The construction of a second oversized lock authorized in 1986. The WERDA from 2007 directs the Army Corps to build a second post-sized lock. There was a cost-benefit analysis completed that did not meet the necessary threshold. Basically built on a couple of different assumptions, one of which being that the materials moving through the locks now could be moved to alternative modes, specifically rail. A report by the Department of Homeland Security in 2016 came out and said basically that there was no alternative. These materials could only move by ship through the SULAC, and again that represented that critical potential point of failure for the system. And I'll talk a little more about this DHS report. So first, just a couple of quick numbers about the SULAC. 100% of the iron ore, huge amount of money, of value of that iron ore. And you can see here, the scenario that was presented in the Homeland Security report said an unplanned six-month closure of the SULACs basically would shut down that conveyor belt of moving iron ore down to the steel mills that then supply the auto manufacturers. So that entire industry would essentially come to a halt, resulting in a $1.3 trillion loss to gross domestic product and a major shutdown of industry and loss of jobs in that six-month window. So putting it into images, this comes from the report again from DHS. This shows a loss of gross domestic product by state. So, really the key here is not just a Michigan issue, not just a Great Lakes issue, but really a national issue, as every state would be impacted negatively from coast to coast throughout. And you can see sort of that line of supply chains and connectivity from north to south. Similar picture on unemployment, just unbelievably high in the Great Lakes and even on the coast, 9%+ in California. I think the lowest number on here is 7%, so currently much higher than the current rate of about 4.5%. So the point of all this is, again, this is a vital piece of national infrastructure for the North American economy. The DHS report refers to it as the Achilles heel of the Great Lakes maritime system. Put a little finer point on the unemployment, you can see the numbers here, comparing it to the worst of the Great Recession of about 8 years ago. Numbers, anywhere from 5 to 10% higher, sort of across the board. So really the key here for the Congress is to fund this project. Again, it's been authorized. There's a current study being done by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers now to recalculate that cost benefit. Understand from Lieutenant Colonel Segrue that it'll be completed in the summer of 2018, and at that point hopefully can move forward. So again, funding is really essential for this project. And so, very different topic, and like I said, I'll move through these pretty quickly. This is smart ships, and this is really what can be considered kind of the future of shipping. And we had an opportunity, I was part of a delegation that went to Norway about a month ago to learn what the Norwegians are doing in this regard. They're really at the forefront of this technology and really leveraging it for their own kind of national interests. We learned a lot of interesting things from them. You know, looking at this as the fourth shipping revolution over the course of the last 200 years or so, fueled by an increasing number of emerging technologies, things like just better data, the Internet of Things, cybersecurity, and really huge game changers in bringing about the future of shipping. So, you know, the question is why? Why smart ships? And the big issues that we're focusing on in this region are safety, security. You're looking at better emissions and fuel usage. In the upper right is a photo of the Exxon Valdez disaster from, I believe, 1989. Human error resulting in, I don't know the number, but many billions of gallons of oil spilled, and there's something like 96% of maritime accidents are a result of human error, so this sort of technology would help to address that. So in terms of, you know, what is a smart ship, what is an autonomous ship? If anybody's familiar with autonomous cars, there's a range of technologies from simple things like helping you to park your car to the full autonomous of a car that drives itself and you can not have to worry about it. That last one is many, many years away, but somewhere in between is the technology that's going to be hitting the market in the next, say, 5 to 10 years. So similarly with ships, it's what's the term that the Norwegians taught us was constrained autonomy, meaning the ship is essentially controlled remotely, really. So people are still involved, they're just not necessarily on the ship. It's more shore-based control. So you see here on the left pictures of, you know, it's very kind of high-tech, high skill, again, not removing people from the equation, but sort of moving where they are in the control of ships. And just big changes to infrastructure throughout, resulting from this, everything from the loading of cargo to mooring and docking of ships, moving towards autonomous control. Just a couple of examples of things that are happening right now in Norway. They've sent up a test bed to test this technology, partnership between government, between industry, academic and research institutions, really a strategic initiative. In the upper left is a picture of a test ferry that they are using, looking at moving, you know, a small number of people, only about 12 people in a bicycle across a little bay here. Versus what we see in the bottom right, this would be a ship that would move fertilizer basically within the Norwegian waters. So two very different applications, but both that are set to hit the water. The ferry, I believe, is operational now or will be shortly. The fertilizer ship at the bottom should be in the water within the next 2 years. So, you know, this isn't a technology that's years away or decades away, but is happening now. Again, Norway's at the lead. We've learned some other interesting things that's happening in Europe, in Norway, in the Netherlands, and in Belgium. And there's little pieces here and there. Everybody's sort of trying to figure it out, and there's really an opportunity for the Great Lakes St. Lawrence region to seize that. So again, a tremendous opportunity looking at, really just exponential growth and what should be a really disruptive and world-changing technology, and with the kind of core opportunity being to create high-paying, high-skill jobs throughout the region. So taking advantage of the region's manufacturing base, of things like IT and communications, and really establishing the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence as a global center of excellence for, you know, not only researching and testing this technology, but really being able to produce and export it. And building on the work that is happening in Michigan, Ohio, Ontario, elsewhere in terms of autonomous cars, and taking advantage of that, and again, establishing the region as a major technology exporter, again, with the focus safety, security, and efficiency. Quickly, these pictures on the right just give an example of some of the different vessels. Everything from a small sort of cargo ship moving like packages within an urban environment. This is a test set up through MIT in Amsterdam. In the middle is a research vessel created by an American company called ASV Global. And on the bottom is an autonomous barge that SpaceX uses to land rockets. So huge difference in size, in capacity, and in the things they're designed to do. You know, everything from small little 2-foot sort of research vessels to, you know, this barge. So really allowing an opportunity to just think about all kinds of new ways of these sorts of vessels that haven't even been created yet. So, you know, this isn't necessarily about huge ocean-going Panamax vessels, or it's not about Lakers being turned into autonomous ships. It's about whole new ways of thinking about it. So at the governors and premiers meeting about 2 months ago, Governor Snyder here signed an MOU with a representative from the Norwegian Forum for Autonomous Ships, launching this partnership between the Great Lakes, St. Lawrence region, and Norway, basically to work together and learn from them on their technology. It launched a smart ship coalition within the Great Lakes, St. Lawrence region, which is a partnership of industry and research and other groups to help develop that. With the goal that within a year or so, by October of 2018, to have a number of policy recommendations to improve the technology, safety, and just public awareness of this, and to those goals I spoke about before in terms of job growth and really establishing the region as a leader in this area. So look forward to working on that. This is, you know, there's not a sort of specific ask in terms of the federal government at this time, but we're working with the Coast Guard to look at some of the policy questions. There will be recommendations both for the federal government and the states and provinces within a year. So this is certainly something that as it gets closer to that time and beyond, we'll certainly be looking to work with our partners in government, in the federal government. So switching gears, and this is again a very, very different topic from the last two, but this is the growth of the cruise industry in the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence. Currently a small but rapidly growing industry with a lot of growth potential. And I'm just going to show a few slides here and set the stage for Bruce Nierenberg. This is global cruising, but you can see in the last 10 years or so just tremendous growth in terms of passengers. In 2015, 1 million full-time jobs and $40 billion in wages. That's worldwide, but you can see it's a absolutely huge global industry and continuing to grow each year. This comes from Ontario, so it represents just one part of the Great Lakes, St. Lawrence, but you can see since 2010, huge growth both in terms of numbers of ships and numbers of passengers. And this goes to 2015. If this chart went to 2018 or even extrapolated 2020, you continue to see just an upward trend in all of these numbers as interest in the region grows and as the number of cruise ships increases. So it's really a unique opportunity, very different from some of the cruises probably other people are familiar with in other parts of the world, and Bruce will speak to that. But you know, again, recent growth and a lot of high potential future growth. You're talking a lot of money being spent by customers on a per customer basis, and you know, this is taking people to all kinds of places, from Chicago and Toronto and big cities, down to little places in Michigan and really throughout the system. So a very unique opportunity. Again, this is the kind of thing people do once and they feel safe and they have a great experience and they want to do it again. And really providing a regional opportunity. You know, this isn't specific to one state or province, but really to all 10. So a couple of challenges to growth that exist now. On the regulatory policy side, there's been some customs issues just in terms of clearance of customers and making sure that is done in a very efficient way, meeting both security needs for the Customs and Border Patrol, but giving the cruise passengers a positive experience and making some consistent rules for the operators to be able to work under. So I'll talk a little bit more about that on the next slide. I spoke about pilotage before. This continues to be an issue both in terms of cost, availability, and really something that will require future work to come to a permanent solution. Things like shoreside facilities in certain areas, just having a better cruise reception for those who are arriving, and then marketing. Some of us in the room will be going after this to a separate meeting to talk about marketing the whole regional system for cruising to really build out that piece, which currently is small and sort of disconnected in terms of a regional approach. So last slide, and this has to do with the customs issue I spoke about. The solution that a group of really all the key stakeholders in this sector have come to is the location of 4 permanent facilities around the Great Lakes St. Lawrence for cruise passengers to be able to clear. So basically, as a ship goes from, say, Toronto to Chicago and makes various stops throughout between, they have an opportunity to clear customs as they move between the U.S. and Canada, move across the U.S.-Canada border in these 4 places. So you see them represented on the map. Duluth, Minnesota in the west, Sault Ste. Marie at the northern point of Michigan, and then Detroit and Cleveland. So this is underway now to get this set up. We had a meeting yesterday with the Customs and Border Patrol. They are eager to bring this about as a sort of, I guess, middle-term solution to make sure that there's some consistency for the operators and really to remove this as an impediment to growth of the industry. So again, this is something where there maybe isn't a specific ask of the Congress, but really to kind of make sure from an oversight view that this continues to move forward, that the Customs and Border Patrol continues to be supportive of this as they have been so far, and really that this solution can come about and bring some predictability for Bruce and his peers. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bruce Nierenberg with the Victory Cruise Lines, and he's going to talk about a little more about the regional cruise opportunity.
I can't take you on a cruise today, but I can tell you a little bit about it, so we'll just have to muddle through it here as best we can. My name is Bruce Nierenberg. I'm head of Victory Cruise Lines. We're based in Miami. We have 2 vessels in our fleet, but we're part of a larger group of ships that specialize in the expedition cruise market. We go to Antarctica, Iceland, Greenland, Labrador, the British Isles, and it's one of the fastest growing segments in our business. The offices of our company are based in Miami. We're sort of a crossroads there. The whole cruise industry these days is based there. Our ownership and management team is very deep in the industry. I've been in the business 42 years. When I got in the business, a big ship had 700 passengers on it. Today, let's say, I have 700 passengers on each deck. So it's not uncommon to see a 5,000-passenger cruise ship today. Totally different dynamic. This particular product is very unique. The Great Lakes has a very special circumstance. When I say Great Lakes, I'm including the Seaway as well, and that it's a very protected area. It's an area that has some natural barriers to unbalanced growth, and at the same time, it puts itself in a position to take advantage of some great economic benefits and its natural habitats. Our products cater to a mature market. It's 5-star food and service. It's all-inclusive. We have a very immersive tour product where the people are not just getting on a bus and doing a city tour. They really want to get into it when they're there, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second. We're the largest operator on the Great Lakes these days with our second ship coming on board, but for us, big is a ship with 200 passengers on it. So we always blend into the community. We don't really take over an area. We started in 2016, and our third summer is just about to start in a few months. During the course of a year, we will have 38 voyages in the Great Lakes and the Seaway. We'll have 11,000 passengers, and we call it all 5 of the Great Lakes and the Seaway, which is unique because most of the time they sort of focus in on a specific area. But we our plan is to make the Great Lakes a complete destination and give people lots of alternatives. Our customers are also a little different than the norm. We serve the mature market, 65+. They're affluent, they're very well traveled, not uncommon for them to have been all over the world, been on 20, 30, 40 cruises, They're very well educated. They're looking for a very immersive experience. The last thing in the world they want to do is wait online, and they like to be catered to and pampered in a realistic way. They really enjoy getting involved with the people and the places that we visit. The most important thing to remember about this, and it's very specific to this region, is that they're very security conscious. As people get older, they get very sensitive to security, international terrorism, things that we all deal with in our everyday lives. But for these people, it's very important. They like to travel in small groups. They like to travel with their friends. They like to go to places that have a uniqueness to them, places they haven't been before. But they also like to stay as close to home as possible. It's very, very important. They like that home style experience. Now, if I can make this work, I'll give you a 1 minute version of what it's like to be on one of these ships. If the computer will cooperate, which it's not going to, I don't think. So we will skip it. Sorry, your cruise just left and it left without you. But anyway, just to give you an idea of what it's like, this is the first picture was the Victory 1. This is our Victory 2, which is just being finished over in Europe, and it'll be here. It's an identical sister ship in every respect to our first vessel. They're unique. They have modern technology. They're not old ships, but they were deliberately built to look like a 1910 coastal steamer because that's the kind of market that we're in. They were designed to. They were actually built originally for Great Lakes type of traffic. They take advantage of smaller communities. They can get in where the big ships don't. They have that warm and fuzzy feeling. They're sort of that whole idea of the central part of North America that Canada and the United States shares. That feeling of welcomeness, it's exactly what these ships were built to do. This is what it looks like on board. All the cabins are very similar. They're all very nice, very high, well appointed. All have big picture windows. There's no waiting in the dining room. You eat whenever you like. And even our lounges are sort of warm and fuzzy in a traditional style. So that's what our passengers like. They tell us when we do exit interviews that what we really liked about the ship was that we felt like we were at home. And on a big ship today, when you go in with 5,000 of your close personal friends on a voyage in the Caribbean, what you'll find is that it takes you a week just to find out where you are. Different product entirely. We have outdoor dining. We have breakfast in the ports outside every day for the passengers. We're here to show our appreciation for this opportunity to provide some new ways to take advantage of what is one of the fastest growing segments in the cruise industry, in tourism. The cruise industry is a monster these days, and it's growing by leaps and bounds, and I'll give you an indication of just how fast that's growing in just a minute. But what we think is an opportunity here is that there's a growth of cruising that we can do within this region that can bring tremendous economic benefit in a controlled manner. The balance to this is really critical. What we mean is we want to grow, we want the economic benefit, but we don't want to lose control of it. So in the search for financial gain, we lose the sense and the community feeling that the Great Lakes and the Seaway has. Every destination's got its issues and problems. We mentioned pilots and clearances and customs and immigration, everything. Those are all issues, but they're all things that can be handled. And they're things that we need your support from time to time to make it work better, work faster, and be more cohesive. But at the end of the day, the goals are the same. What we want to do is create more economic benefit to an area in a safe environment, a secure environment. So we never want to sacrifice those things, and that's something that we keep on top of our agenda all the time. Excuse me. This region, the Great Lakes and the Seaway, is better positioned than most to take advantage of the demographics, the personal preferences, the travels, the idea of making you feel safe and secure when you go. I've marketed vacation products all over the world. I've opened a lot of new ports. I opened Port Canaveral, Florida for the first cruises. I opened the Port of Houston, Texas. I brought the first ships into Cozumel, Mexico, which is now the largest port in the world in terms of arriving tourism guests. The Outer Islands of the Bahamas, which now are a mainstay in the program. So I understand what happens and what's required for these things, but I have never seen a combination of circumstances that is more suited to the growth of a market than we have right now in the Great Lakes and the Seaway. Why? Because people who are affluent are looking for places like this to go to. There, you have the opportunity to take advantage of all of your existing infrastructure and become a major entity and player in this in a controlled manner. It's sort of like what Alaska was in the 80s, but the trouble with Alaska was, and they, by the way, had their four biggest years in the history of tourism arrivals in the last 4 years, for the same reasons that the Great Lakes is very popular now. But Alaska could take every size ship. and they have become overrun with large cruise ships. And those of you who have been to Alaska, just envision 4,000 or 5,000 passenger ships coming into Juneau, everybody wanting to get off at the same time and buy a t-shirt. Because that's what you're dealing with there, and it's losing the feel of what made Alaska special in a lot of people's opinions. They'll get it under control, but it's very painful to walk away from the money once it starts coming in. So we have an opportunity to take advantage of the natural circumstances. The baby boomer market, the 65-plus, is going to be the leading traveler in the world for the next 20 years. The advantage that means is that by having this kind of product and positioning ourselves as an industry in the middle of this of North America, we can take advantage and have a great economic engine for a long time. These people have the disposable income, they're retiring earlier, they have the predisposition to travel, they like to travel on the kinds of things that we have to offer, they're very security conscious, all this stuff just hits them one item after another, and we're sitting here and we just need to brand it. They're looking for new places, they're looking for historical content. This is the perfect solution. Plus, you don't have an overrun destination. You can take any one of our ships or some of our competitors who we all get along with. Pearl Seas is a company that does a great job. We go into a port and our ships disappear into the community. 200 people are never going to overrun a town. So what's great is that it doesn't lose the concept of what people are coming to see. And by the way, there's a few more ships being built too, as I'll show you in a few minutes, that we have an opportunity to grow this market exponentially. I think I've covered some of these things here, so I'm going to move on. Yes, I did. Okay. That, by the way, it's very hard to get a 5,000 passenger ship into the locks, so it's okay. You're covered. It won't happen. We would like to continue to work together with institutional entities, with the governments, especially the small town communities. We've had the opportunity to have these ships visit them. You have it all right here. But there's an interesting thing. If you ask a customer or a tourist and say, well, where are you going on vacation? I say, we're thinking about taking a cruise. And they say, well, where are you going to go? And they'll say, well, think about a Caribbean cruise. We're thinking about a cruise to the Med. We're thinking about a cruise to Alaska, maybe a cruise to Mexico. What we have an opportunity now is to enter into that branding environment and create a brand called Great Lakes Cruising. And it's what we need to do. The nice thing about it is because the ship goes around, goes to both countries, goes to many ports, we go on an average of 7 ports in one itinerary for 9 days, that we bring that economic benefit to a region. So a Great Lakes cruise can become a brand, and it's not that difficult to do. We've done it before, and you're perfectly positioned to do that. That's one of our messages today, is to put our resources behind branding that destination, branding the region, taking advantage of it. We, as an example, with our two ships, we go to 22 different ports during the summer, all throughout the Great Lakes, and going to all 5 lakes and the Seaway. You're going to have the opportunity to take advantage of this for a long time, but after that, after we take the mature market for the next few years, the next market that you'll want to do is the family market. Now, the problem is the ships that are coming into the Great Lakes today cater mostly to couples who are 65-plus. They don't really have the facilities on board for families. But we're building a lot of new ships right now, and several of those vessels, you'll find family facilities on board, so people with younger children, not babies, but people, let's say, 6, 7, 8 and above, but in age, will have all kinds of opportunities to experience the region as well. And that will put you on the map for sure. This is what the new ships are going to look like. My company has 10 of these on order because we cater to markets all over the world. Not all 10 of them are going to come to the Great Lakes at one time. Don't worry, I promise. But at the same time, we have buttonhole 3 of them to join the Victory fleet to come in over the next 4 years, one at a time, to come in and be in the regular market as well as the family market. We need to invest in the product development locally. We need to make sure we have the infrastructure, whether it's CBP issues. We need to get a hold of the piloting situation. Lake Superior is an absolutely untapped natural resource as far as destinations. A lot of people haven't been at the Great Lakes. Almost nobody's been up to Lake Superior lately. So that's a great opportunity for growth, and it's exotic as it comes. I mean, we can promise them to go visit some grizzly bears up in Thunder Bay if we really want to. So these are things that people really associate with quality and new experiences on vacation. All right. Just to give you an idea, I cut this out and put this on my flight up yesterday from Miami. This is a page out of a magazine. That list right there is 47 small ships that are going to be built over the next 3.5 years. 47 ships. All of these, or the vast majority of them, could easily fit into any one of the programs on the Seaway and the Great Lakes. Now, not all of these ships are going to be marketed for that. Some of these have been already planned to go to Antarctica and to go to other places because those are very lucrative markets. But as an example, there's 10 ships here. It's called Sunstone. That's our company. And those 10, what we do is we put those into the expedition and markets like Victory's Inn based on demand. So if we can build the brand here in the Great Lakes, this is by far the most economical one of these expedition markets to put it in. When you put a ship in Antarctica, it takes you a month to get it down there, and then at the end of the season, a month to get it back. And just imagine what the costs are associated with sailing a ship for 2 months out of 12 a year with no passengers on it. So the economics are in your favor. The opportunity is there. We have an incredible opportunity to make this a major cruise destination brand. So when you ask somebody 6 months to a year from now where they're going and they say they're going on a cruise, one of the five places that they'll mention will be Great Lakes Cruising because they heard it's really a cool thing to do, easy to get to, lots of gateways to choose from, no international travel of a material manner in terms of transatlantics, inexpensive to get to the opportunity to go. So it's there, it's ready to happen, and as far as I'm concerned, our company is totally committed to doing what we need to do to help and provide any leadership, any experience. We've developed these things before, and we think this is really, really a great opportunity. We hope we can get your support here in Washington to do whatever you can to push this along as well.
Any questions for Bruce or for me?
Just out of curiosity, because I know for like autonomous vehicles, one of the big issues is spectrum. Is that something that's going to be run into with the smart ship initiative, or especially being in more remote areas, not having enough access to the spectrum? Is that something that might?
Yeah, he was asking about the spectrum in terms of data transmission for smart ships, and if that'll be an issue. Yeah, that's something that I know the Coast Guard is thinking about, just with this technology being sort of in its infancy. Certainly a lot of issues to work out, and you know, I guess I don't know what the correct word would be, but I guess harmonization of that would I would think would be probably a necessary thing. So I know the Coast Guard is paying attention to that. The IMO, the International Maritime Organization, is looking at that as well. And certainly something we'll have to think about as part of the regional initiative.
Bruce, could you or Mike talk a little bit more about pilotage? Why is this a problem, and what needs to be done?
Pilotage is a problem.
Can you stand up just so we can hear you?
Yes. Pilotage is a problem not just in this region but everywhere. The pilots are very expensive. Quite often, there are times when it's a grandfathered activity that's not really necessary with the technology that's available today. We need a more realistic position as far as how pilotage is used by passengers, I guess for cargo ships as well. But the problem we run into in the Great Lakes, in addition to that, because there seems to be a shortage from time to time, and we've actually had to cancel ports and adjust schedules because on top of overpaying for a service, quite often the service is not even there. And then that costs us a lot of money because we have to refund passengers and cruises are messed up. These are these people's vacation. I mean, that's not the reason to do it. I mean, one thing, if you get clogged on the seaway going by Niagara Falls, that's one thing because that's economic transportation requirements. But because somebody is not available to be a pilot and be on the ship, that's not the right thing to do. So there's some modifications, some realistic looks at what we should use this service for in the future. You're not alone as a region in the Great Lakes and the Seaway, but it's something that's a problem in our business.
Yeah, and just beyond that, as it applies more broadly to the maritime sector, its availability, as Bruce talked about, its cost, its sort of a disjointed structure with, I think, five or six different pilotage agencies across the region in both countries. So but definitely an area that can use some more coherence to the way it's set up.
Mike, I was just going to ask, maybe you answered it, but is it a Canadian issue, an American issue? Is it an issue of going between the two?
Yeah, I mean, on the Canadian side, I know, so for example, Transport Canada is doing a review right now of the pilotage system in Canada. So yeah, there's you know, just sort of differences exactly on both sides of the border. Okay. Well, with no questions, thank you everyone for their time. Thanks again to Matt and Northeast Midwest for setting this up, and thanks again.